Hello everybody and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network, home of the best new music you've never heard, and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archive page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning in to Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. This show airs at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Thursday. For more information about this show and listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/chitchat.htm. And now here are your hosts of Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark, Lisa, Nancy, and Betty Ann.
Hi everybody, it's time for Chit Chat Cafe Live After Dark. Time to relax, slip into something comfortable, grab a martini, and join us with a great show tonight. We have some really cool guests. We have Linda Erklesian from The Real Housewives of D.C., we have Jillian Lauren, who's an author. And then we have David Good, who won the Bachelor Pad last year, and he's got a book out that he'd like to share with us. So, girls, what's going on? Betty Ann, you had some excitement over the weekend, huh, with this hurricane?
Yes. Well, I'm at the Jersey Shore, and we had mandatory evacuations, so we packed up everything. Actually, last Thursday during the show, I was panicking about it.
I remember that now. Yeah, I came up to the least a week already.
And we packed up everything, well, as much as we possibly could, went back to, you know, our home in outside of Philadelphia, and we, you know, went through the storm, and as soon as the parkway was open, we hopped in the car and came back to the Jersey Shore. And the funny thing was, there was no damage here. It was perfect and beautiful and a ghost town, and everything was closed.
They scare you to death, and it ended up not being so bad. But you know what? I guess you have to, though, because you never know. Could have been bad.
Well, it could have been bad. I think that there were 48 deaths.
Well, a lot of them were people being stupid.
Right.
People go out and drive. Now, this is really upsetting. A 20-year-old girl around here decided to go out and see her boyfriend at 1 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the hurricane. She got swept away by a flash flood and died. To me, that's ridiculous. I felt terrible, but why would you be so stupid?
Yeah, that's true. But, the shore was fortunate because we didn't get the bad weather. I mean, like, it kind of just moved a little bit, shifted, and then there was major flooding in Pennsylvania and a lot of the northeast states. So, I mean, you just didn't know. It's just the way it worked out. But it's sad that a lot of people did lose their lives.
Mm. Anyway, on a happy note,
yeah,
we have a cool guest tonight.
We need that.
let's do something fun. Talk about our guest.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I would like to introduce our guest tonight. Linda Erklesian is the founder and president of the Artist Agency in Washington, D.C., and she's also a cast member of the Bravo hit reality show, The Real Housewives of D.C. And Lisa and I were fortunate enough to meet Linda this past March in New York City at Kat Omni's book signing. And it's great to have you tonight here, Linda, as our guest. Welcome.
Well, thank you, ladies. It's a pleasure to be here in my little moo-moo, and I'm not drinking a martini, but I do have a glass of wine in hand.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, that's appropriate. That's what we need. The wine is good. So you have a very interesting life, and I wanted to start with, I heard you were a backup singer for Candy Staten, and you even opened for Teddy Pendergrass. Can you tell us about your early years?
Well, when I was in high school, I had this dream of Hollywood and singing and performing, and when I moved to Washington, I auditioned for Candy Staten and became a backup singer and went on the road with her, and it was actually Candy Staten who was opening for Teddy Pendergrass, and I just happened to be her backup singer, but she's an incredible singer. She's still singing mostly gospel music today, mm-hmm. and she's had, you know, longevity that not every singer actually can say, but I mean, she was a wonderful person, and I learned a lot about the music industry, and one of the things that I learned was that no, that was not for me. So I that only lasted for 6 months.
Oh, well, I guess it was a good thing that you learned early that it wasn't for you and you could move in a different direction, I guess.
Well, it's a tough industry. You know, overall, I think the music industry is a very tough industry, especially when you're young, because you're constantly on the road. And I just felt like that wasn't, you know, I think it's important to check off your list of things that you think you want to do and maybe give it a shot and then think, that's not necessarily what I think is going to be a long-term plan for me. But it was very enlightening.
It was a good experience, I guess, which kind of changed your direction, because I think around that time, is that when you founded the artist agency?
Well, actually, I always, you know, enjoyed doing hair and makeup when I was in theater, and when I was on the road, I would actually spend time with Candy, and you know, I just enjoyed styling as a rule. And so when I came off the road, I went to cosmetology school, because at that time, which was 100 years ago, you had to have a license in order to do makeup on location. And although I wasn't that interested in hair, to be a stylist on location, you really need to know how to do both hair and makeup, because the way the budgets are structured, it's important. And so I went back to school, and I just continued to do makeup and skincare, and I loved it. But what I realized is when I finally passed my board exam and was able to actually work on location was that there was no representation. And so after a couple of years of very frustrating, you know, phone calls with clients and trying to figure out why I was the last to get paid and really looking at the industry standards overall, I felt like I could make a difference if I started an agency. And that's really the concept of THE Artist Agency.
And what type of people do you represent in your agency? Is it models, stylists? Like, who do you have as your, clients?
Well, we originally started as an agency that represented stylists that did hair, makeup, wardrobe, mm-hmm. food styling, prop styling, etc. And then about a year later, I started representing models for print and runway only. And so that has now been 27 years ago. And our clients predominantly are for the models. Locally, it's the department stores such as Neiman Marcus, Saks Fifth Avenue, Macy's, Bloomingdale's, Nordstrom's, and, you know, the individual boutiques that we have in Washington that are, you know, what I think of as, you know, super chic, which is Moulet, and we have, you know, Charm, which is a new accessory store that's located in Georgetown, and every day, you know, we have new clients that are coming about. The editorial clients are few and far between in Washington, but we still have them, and we do have the support of our local magazines, and that's, you know, that's certainly a wonderful way for models to be able to get tear sheets. In addition to that, we work with the advertising agencies and photographers in commercial print and fashion print.
Oh, okay. Well, I wanted to find out about your work with the Coburn Foundation.
Well, it's a bittersweet story in that I became executive director of the James and Paula Coburn Foundation when my very best friend, Paula Coburn, died of cancer 6 years ago. And James Coburn, who, you know, most people know, larger than life, amazing actor, had died a year prior to her being diagnosed. And so her goal, when she realized that she had a limited time left, let's say, on this planet, was to secure the legacy of her husband. And so she founded the foundation, and being her best friend, she entrusted me to run the foundation. And it's been a wonderful opportunity to learn more and more about Los Angeles, because the majority of the beneficiaries are in Los Angeles. In fact, we're preparing right now for a big Operation Smile Gala in September, September 23rd. And, you know, they're actually located out of Richmond, Virginia, but their big gala annually is in Los Angeles. And some of the other beneficiaries are LACMA and KCET, so public television. That's been wonderful. We did a cinema series with them last year, and we were able to showcase some of James Coburn's films. And it's, you know, we've been working on a book about his life for 2 years, and the writers have completed it. We're in search of a publisher. That's like finding a needle in a haystack today. Everybody's about online publishing.
Okay.
But you know, he's definitely deserving of a biography, and I will continue to pursue that. And just a few months ago, I guess in May, we did a dedication ceremony for a wellness garden at the Motion Picture and Television Fund, which was it was an incredible experience. It took almost 2 years to build the garden and actually have their style, if you will, which was very Eastern, to be realized. Mm-hmm. You know, so Kenneth Cobham Puay designed the Yin Yang screen, and we have this lovely fountain, and it's just a beautiful area where the residents and people that are visiting the Motion Picture and Television home have a place that they can sit in, like a very peaceful, Zen-like environment. And when I think of James Coburn and I think of Paula Coburn, that's really how I think of them, as being very Zen-like people and a ton of fun. So I miss her, I miss her every single day. But it basically made me realize just how important it is to have private foundations and how much private foundations can lend a hand, especially when we are in the situation that we're in economically today. You know, we don't have as much money or in our reserve.
Yeah.
So we need as much private funding as we can get.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we all want to know about your experience as a cast member of The Real Housewives of D.C. So can you share some of that with us?
I had a great time. I think I was probably one of the few who still has I think coming out of Washington, and I understand we've made history because the chances of them ever renewing, D.C. Housewives is slim to none. But I think that it was a great experience. It taught me, yet again, I think that life, every single day when you wake up, there is something that presents itself. And at the end of the day, if I can say that I've learned something of value, then that's been a great day. And being a cast member of Housewives of D.C., I think I could have probably written the book at the end of every day. It was a lot of fun. It was stressful at times. I was doing a lot of juggling. I mean, I missed going on Watch What Happens Live with Andy because I was actually hosting at the Operation Smile Gala on the same evening. Mm-hmm. So, it is a juggling act, and you like, for me, I would like to be able to do everything, but life does not allow us necessarily to do absolutely everything, and you just have to make choices. So I missed Andy, and I missed Watch What Happens Live, but I was present for Operation Smile, and I feel that's exactly where I needed to be. But I love doing Housewives. It was rewarding. It helped to, I think, expose my business and what I do in Washington to a larger audience that, would say, I think that people in my industry, of course, knew who we were and what we did, but not on a global level. And with syndications with NBC and, I hear from people in Australia, and now it just aired in London, and it's just a wonderful thing to be able to showcase the charities that our agency is involved in, like Men Against Breast Cancer and Mm-hmm. You know, we have something coming up for St. Jude's Hospital with Armani and Neiman Marcus, and, you know, Macy's is hosting the Men Against Breast Cancer Men's Show. So, you know, things like that that were highlighted were really meaningful mm-hmm. to me. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it was really worth it, and I have no regrets.
Well, I loved watching the show, and I think you were great. And I even, you know, I enjoyed watching you with your family and all your interactions with the different cast members. Was it difficult to have the cameras in your home with your family? I mean, how did your children feel about that?
In the beginning, my children, in the very beginning, my children really, you know, stood behind the scenes. They wanted to see, you know, Half Yard Productions was the production company that came in, and they were so respectful, and my family became very comfortable with the crews, and over time opened themselves up to being on camera. But I really let them decide when they were ready. It wasn't something mm-hmm. that I felt was necessary, because my main focus in doing the show, of course, was to be able to highlight the philanthropic work that I do and to mm-hmm. highlight the agency. And my family is a very private entity in my life, and so that was really their call. And I think that they, you know, enjoyed it at the very end. I mean, it was a lot, you know, the dog was probably my little Ichiban, my little chubby pug. He was probably the hardest thing to manage during the show, because even his breathing is picked up on Mike, so he couldn't even be anywhere near, you know, when we would do the interviews.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, what are we going to do with Ichiban, because everybody's going to hear him snorting and snoring and breathing, he was probably the most difficult to manage while we were filming. But it really, I mean, of course they're in your home, but I have to say that even though people ask, and there's some controversy about it as far as, is it scripted, isn't it scripted, there are no scripts. It is not scripted. It is, they come mm-hmm. into your life, and it's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm on my way to a fashion show. I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing that. They do look ahead, you know, as far as what your schedule is and mm-hmm. what's important to you, and they are very respectful when I would say, well, this is something that is very private, so I prefer not to have that on camera. And mm-hmm. so when you look at it in the bigger picture, I feel that reality television is kind of getting a bad rap, because I was really given a lot of choices, and I was myself, and was I always proud of everything I did? Not necessarily, but that's what reality television is. You're in the moment. You're expressing your emotions, and you know, all in all, I feel that that's what it's supposed to be. And mm-hmm. it was somewhat intrusive, but we managed it, and I feel that we were respected and our wishes were honored. And so, you know, in the end, Bravo was there to guide us and try to help us understand what all the media attention was going to bring. But I have to tell you, no matter how much people tell you that, mm-hmm. no one can really give you the full-on picture of what that looks like. And I'm still very humbled by it. I just can't believe, you know, how many people can walk by and say, oh, I know you. And you just, it's a very humbling experience. And I just think it was a gift that I was able to do something like that and not have to do a second season.
Well, you can ask Lisa when she and I went to the book signing, Kat's book signing.
Right.
I walked in, I said, Lisa, there's Linda. Look, there's Linda Erklesian. There's Andy Cohen.
You were getting whiplash. You were getting whiplash.
I really was. My head was just flipping back and forth, because I'm the one who just loves watching all the Bravo Housewives shows, so my head was spinning.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad you made that. That was such a great evening. And I loved being able, you know, we had people from Half Yard. We had Bravo. We had, you know, of course, as you know, Alex was there from New York. And it was just a, you know, cat.
Yeah.
I think being able for her to launch her book in New York, and it was just a wonderful evening, and being surrounded by friends and meeting a lot of new people that, you know, like when I had an opportunity to meet y'all and we discussed our our common denominator, our children, it was just really a fabulous evening. I had a great time. I'm still smiling from that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And our common denominator, they're all back there now.
I know. And now my baby's there. I can't even believe it. It's like I have to adjust to the empty nesting, as do the pets, because they're all looking at me like, what happened to everyone? And, of course, the last few weeks, especially Samuel, the youngest, was like, well, Mom, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so is on their way to college. So I had, it seemed like, a dozen teenagers every single day in my home with the, oh, but this one's leaving for college. And then, so finally when the day came, it was the hurricane, and we were on our way there, and we get an alert that says, it's been canceled. The move-in has been canceled. So then we turn around and drive back, and so it was like, okay, here we go again, take two. But I was, you know, having some experience at the school. We moved in at night before the, you know, the rush the following day.
So
We were off at a restaurant having lunch when everyone else was moving in.
Yeah.
So
I know.
But it was, it's definitely going to be an adjustment. And I can't believe that it was like a year ago now that the show was airing, and life can change, you know, really on a dime, but at this time in my life, I mean, it's really, it's just hard to believe that it's been an entire year.
Wow. I know, and it was one of my favorite shows, too.
Well, thank you. I mean, I enjoyed it. I know there were moments where it was certainly boring at times, and I think that Washington is really misunderstood. I don't think that people realize, you know, all the multi facets of Washington, and I hope that if nothing else, especially with all the syndication that's out there for the show, that people will really start to see that it's a pretty cool little city, and that it's a great place to visit. And, you know, I think that all in all, I hope that other people will have a chance to see the show and enjoy it. I mean, we still are hearing feedback from different countries that are receiving it, so it's interesting.
Well, are you still friends with many or any of the cast members, or were you friends in the beginning before you all got together to do the show?
Well, Mary and Kat and I see each other pretty frequently, but I think that's, you know, mainly because with Stacy, I mean, I love Stacy to death, but she has, you know, two younger children, and our lifestyles are very different. She lives in Washington. I'm now back in Virginia. And, you know, I think also that Stacy and I work so much that, you know, she and I have not encountered each other the same way in which Mary and I already knew each other. We worked together with Labels for Love, her nonprofit organization that, you know, works with, which I think you saw on the show, the Layla Rose show that we did for Labels for Love. And and so that's how I met Mary, really, was through her foundation. And she introduced herself to me, and we started working together. And that was really a nice relationship. And Kat was completely new to my life, but, you know, I just adored her, and we've had a wonderful friendship, and I think she's one of the funniest people I've ever met.
Yeah, and, she is pretty funny.
Oh, my God, she's hilarious, and, you know, I just, I think that, so Mary and Kat and I see each other as much as we possibly can. Mary and I are working on the district sample sale right now, along with a huge committee of people. But, you know, that's taking place soon, so we've been seeing each other more often, planning, you know, working with her on that. And so, you know, our life is somewhat back to normal. I really feel that, you know, it's my life has always been very busy, and you know, having my bi-coastal world isn't you know, it isn't a bad thing. I really, really love Los Angeles. I love my friends there. I have I was visiting Los Angeles for well over 25 years before I became the executive director of a foundation there. So it's home to me as well as Washington. Yeah. I mean, I really love it. And I was very happy for the Beverly Hills Housewives when I knew they were going to be filming. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this is going to be incredible, because where else besides Beverly Hills can you experience that? So, you know, I've been excited for them and for their ratings and the fact that they're going to be airing again soon. And you know, so you'll probably just see me coming from L.A. to Washington and back, and hopefully we'll see each other in our mutual territory.
Yes. Well, Linda, it's been a pleasure having you tonight as our guest.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
No, and thank you for having me, and good luck with everything.
Oh, thank you. And we would love to have you on again. So please, you know, we'll contact you, and maybe we can schedule you again, and you can talk a little bit more about, you know, what you're doing, and because you're just so much fun to talk to, and you're so interesting.
Oh, thank you. Well, really, it's been a pleasure, and I love speaking with you, so please feel free to contact me anytime.
Okay,
thank you, Linda.
Great.
Just not in the a.m.,
okay?
I don't do mornings. Outside of that, I'm good to go. All right.
Thank
you, ladies.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well.
Hello.
Hello?
Our
next guest is on.
Hello?
Jillian there.
Yes,
Hi.
It is. This is Jillian Lauren.
Hi, Jillian. How are
Hi.
You? Jillian, I'm Betty Ann, and Lisa is here with us, and Nancy.
Hi, Betty Ann, Lisa, and Nancy.
Hello.
Well, hi.
Welcome to the show. I'd like to introduce Jillian Lauren. She's a performer and an author of the New York Times bestselling memoir, Some Girls, My Life in a Harem, and a new novel, which was just released yesterday, Pretty. So, Jillian, tell us what's been going on. We're so thrilled to have you as our guest tonight. Tell us about yourself.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and you pretty much said it all. My novel just came out yesterday, so I'm really excited about that. It's called Pretty, and I'm getting ready to go on a book tour to support it, and, you know, writing, and I'm a mother of a 3.5-year-old, and I live here in Los Angeles, so between writing and performing and my son, I'm pretty busy.
Wow. Well, I have to say, I was, you know, looking over your accomplishments, and you really, you know, have a lot going on here. First of all, your novel, Pretty, it's about addiction. Can you tell us what the title Pretty really means?
Well, you know, the title has sort of a number of different reflections throughout the book. But really, it's a book about a young woman who is in a terrible car accident and is partially disfigured by it. But more importantly, her boyfriend dies, and she feels internally really disfigured and scarred. And she is really forced to redefine her ideas of beauty and what is pretty about her, and what is, you know, worth living for in the world. And that's really the central struggle of the book. So, and there's also other meanings. She's attending beauty school, mm-hmm. so there is this, world of real focus on outsides and physical beauty. And also she has been a stripper, and that career is really taken from her when she's in her car accident. And so she's forced to also start to try to find her worth in the world as a woman who is no longer operating as a commodity. So that's really the meaning of the title.
It's really interesting because it's so true. I mean, when you have the looks, it is part of what helps you, accomplish things in life a lot of times. And a lot of times you have to learn how to do that from within. But why did you write about addiction?
Addiction is, I draw a lot from my life. Whether I write both memoir and fiction, I draw a lot from my life. Well, I draw everything from my life from memoir, but I draw a lot from my life mm-hmm. and fiction. And I'm somebody who has struggled quite a bit with substance abuse, as have many, many people that I know and love. And, and I think it's a really important, topic for certainly mm-hmm. for my generation and for the next one. It's epidemic substance abuse, and just like the compulsive use of substances, of anything outside of ourselves to try to answer this like endless desire, this sort of unfulfillable desire we have, looking toward food, looking toward money, looking toward sex, looking toward drugs, looking toward alcohol, mm-hmm. Try and fulfill us or make us feel better when really, obviously, the answer is in none of those things.
Yeah, I agree. Jillian, your husband, Scott Schreiner of Weezer, is mm-hmm. a famous musician. How did you both meet?
Bowling.
Bowling. I thought you might say, at like a concert or something cool like that.
Okay, well, we did meet bowling, but I saw him at a party, and I asked a friend of mine, who is that guy at the party? He was really cute. And my friend said, well, that is the nicest guy in all of Los Angeles. And I was like, well, is he single? And she said, yes, he is, and as a matter of fact. And I said, well, how do I meet him? She said, well, he goes bowling, this group of guys, every Sunday night, and we could go. We could go meet them there. And so we did. So I met with her, and I went bowling. And he was actually not very nice to me at first. I was like, that is not the nicest guy in Los Angeles. What are you talking about? but I later found out that he didn't like it when girls showed up at dude's bowling night because he thought that, we caused trouble, which was actually true. We did cause trouble. There is no longer a dude's bowling night, but he got a wife out of it. So,
He did okay.
He did okay, and now he's like he's already got my son like bowling, a little ball down the driveway. he's getting a new dude's bowling night started.
Well, Weezer is here in Minnesota at our state fair coming up. I'm Nancy, by the way.
Oh, hi, Nancy. Yes, they are. I think they're going to be there. What, Saturday night?
Yes, Saturday night, and so I'm going to hear that concert. I can't wait.
Oh, you are? Oh, just let me know. I can get you passes, you can go and
oh, that'd be great.
Have fun
for me. And have some pictures taken.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that'd be great. We could put them up on our website.
It's a great show. Yeah, and my son was adopted from Ethiopia, and a lot of the families that we went to to Ethiopia with that we met over there, there's a big Ethiopian community in Minnesota. And so we've got a lot of friends there, too, so you'll see all the little cutie kids
there
visiting Scott also, yeah.
Yeah, his picture, your son's picture is darling. How old is he?
He's 3 and a half.
Fun.
Yeah, it's fun. He's real cute. There's no doubt. He's really cute.
And what's his name?
His name is Karaku.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And what does he like to do? What do you like to do with him? Does he like to bowl, too?
He doesn't like to bowl, no.
You know, they have that bumper bowl.
No, he actually likes baseball. He's crazy about the baseball. But he's also a great dancer, and he's very musical. He loves rock music. I mean, I'm sure it's because, you know, he's been hearing it since, you know, for years now. We just actually went to the Weezer concert out in the desert here, and, you know, he was so tired. He was falling asleep in my arms, and he would not let me. He'd just scream bloody murder every time I tried to take him away. He had to watch to the end of the concert. So, you know, he loves music.
David,
he loves... Hello?
Hello?
David, we're
Hello?
With our first guest. We'll introduce you in a minute, okay, dear?
Okay.
He likes french fries.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, I bet he'll be involved with music, too, as he gets growing.
He's a star, there's no doubt. I mean, he really is a star. He's going to be, he's a performer, one way or another. I'd put money on it.
Well, that's great. Well, Jillian, it has been our honor and pleasure to have you. We have your book listed on our Chit Chat Cafe Live website so our listeners can find you. And we hope to have you join us again to talk more about your books.
Okay, well, thanks so much for having me and having me talk about Pretty. And it's available in stores and on Amazon and online now. So everyone
well,
should
that's
get it.
Great. Well, I'm going to send you a little email about just being able to meet Scott at the Minnesota State Fair.
Yes, please do.
Well, great. Thank you, Jillian.
Okay, thanks a lot for having
me. Thanks, Jillian. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
We definitely have to have her back.
She's
darling.
We didn't
darling. Even talk about being in a harem.
Yeah.
I want to hear about that.
We have to
me
hear that
too.
One.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to our next guest. He's an author of the book called The Man Code Book, A Woman's Guide to Cracking the Tough Guy. David is also the winner of the original Bachelor Pad, and he's now making personal appearances around the country. Welcome, David.
What's up, guys?
Nothing. What's up with you? You're doing
Oh,
great.
Nothing. I just fixed some brownies, made some pizza, and I'm getting ready to go to bed. I've been traveling for the last week. I was out in Las Vegas for my birthday, and I flew pretty much straight to New York for the Today Show, which we filmed yesterday, and then I just got home, so...
You got it going on, I tell you.
Yeah, it's been pretty busy the last couple months.
Now, are you a regular on the Today Show now? Because you're on there pretty frequently.
Yeah, we do. I do the guys' tell-all panel every month. It's once a month, end of every month. So, yeah, I've been on there. I think this is going to be my seventh time.
Wow. Well, you're going to be on our panel. We're having you on at the end of October. We're going to kind of do the same thing. We have a panel.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. It's always fun. I love that stuff. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It is fun. So, how's it going with your book?
The book's doing okay. We still haven't got it in some of the stores that we wanted to get it into, so we're struggling with politics to go along with that. It's a lot harder than I thought to do, but it's going good. You know, 5% of my book still goes to Stand Up to Cancer, and you know, it's with my father just having cancer and beating it. That all of that stuff really hit home. It all kind of fell into place, and so it's good. The book's doing okay.
Good, good. So what's next for David Good?
That's a good question. I'm looking to buy it into a wine company that I've been looking into out in Carmel Valley, California, and trying
to. Is
that with Jesse? Yep, with Jesse, and we're trying to go into business together to ramp sales up, and it's a little more difficult than I thought for the amount we're asking for. It's we're having to jump through some loops here, but It's coming along, and I'm really, that's going to be an exciting thing for all of us, Jesse and I combined. It's a pretty good team. He's a hard worker and smart guy, and they've been in business for 5 years, and he's a fifth-generation winemaker, so I trust that. And then you put both of our sales together, with him being on the East or West Coast and me on the East Coast. It seems like a pretty good deal, so we're trying to get it rolling.
Now, did you know Jesse before this whole Bachelor stuff?
I didn't. I met Jesse on season 5 when Jillian season the Bachelorette, and I met him out there, and we became really close, and we've really been really close. I mean, I just saw him 2 days ago at my party in Vegas. He came out, and he actually hosted it for me. And so we've been, for the last 2 years, we've been really good friends.
Oh, that's nice. Now, you were just on the Bachelor pad a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Natalie and I were on the Bachelor pad. We helped judge a contest. It was pretty
swimming
fun.
Swimming contest, the synchronized swimming.
right, yeah. Which I know nothing about. I know nothing about synchronized swimming, but it was still funny seeing everybody.
Right, it was really funny. Well, tell us about, what do you think about the Bachelor pad this time?
I don't know. I'm really struggling having to watch it. I mean, I'm tired of the whole Casey and Vienna thing. It's just getting old,
yeah,
and it's like...
getting real old.
It's like, I feel like we're watching like a junior high class kind of arguing, bicker and stuff. Like, it's just so childish, and they're adults, and it's just like, you know, there's people that's been on the show that probably are pretty funny and have done some funny stuff, but they're not showing it.
They're not showing anybody else. They're hardly showing anybody else. William got voted off this week, but they didn't even show him on the whole show, so you don't even know why he got voted off.
No, not at all, and that's what I mean. I mean, they have to start... show more of the storyline with other people, and unfortunately they're not going to. I mean, it's halfway over, and this is all we're seeing.
Nancy, you have anything to ask David?
Well, I have a curious question. You know, the football season's upon us, and I've noticed that you are really inspired by Vince Lombardi.
Me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really am. My family, my father's very militaristic in the way I kind of grew up, and that stuff really hits home. Like, I agree with what Vince Lombardi says and all that stuff, and the things that you get out of football. So I really like that. The speeches he made, and my high school coach, and I really looked up to him, Coach Miller, and he reminds me of him. You know, he always had good speeches and that stuff. I like it. It's something I enjoy. It gives me pumped up.
Well, I also agree with his philosophy. Love his quotations and his book. You're right. It's a wonderful way to live and keep your life focused.
Yeah, for sure.
So we have a guest coming up who has written a book about Vince Lombardi. He will be talking about that. We'll have to let you know so you can tune in.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so tell us what else is new with Man Code Book.
What's new with the Man Code Book?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we want to get up into to Toronto and up in near Canada before the end of the... before it gets cold up there, too cold. I don't want to go up there in the middle of the winter. It's a pain in the butt. And so we're trying to get up there. We're a little behind schedule right now, so we'll probably be up there within the end of next month. So it's going to be getting close to winter time, though. We're pushing it. But
that's
the next leg.
Okay. We've heard from a lot of our Chit Chat Cafe Live readers that they really enjoy your book and watching you, and they always love it when you're here with us on our show.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. So, but Canada really gets into the show. Like, you go up there, they know you. I mean, they know who you are, and there's such, it's such a nice community. Everywhere you go up there, everybody's so nice. And so Jesse and I did a little tour up there a while back, and it was fun. So I'm looking forward to actually, I didn't have my book at the time, so I'm looking forward to getting up there with my book.
That's great.
So David, give the girls some tips on landing a good guy. Or tell us, better yet, tell us what turns a guy off. Say you meet a guy, and you go on a first date. What would turn you off on a first date?
What would turn me off on the first date?
Yeah, like what would be like a deal breaker?
You know, a girl that all she cares about is material things, I think, would be a deal breaker for me. If all she's asking about is how much money you make and what kind of car you drive and doesn't say please or thank you when you do something for her. I think that's a deal breaker right away. I don't want a gold digger or somebody like that.
What do you believe in sex on a if somebody had sex with you on the first day, would that turn you off to a girl?
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't turn me off necessarily. Sex on the first date wouldn't turn me off, but it wouldn't turn me on to wanting to date them for a long time. I say in my book that if you have sex on your first date, that, you know, it triggers something in the back of a guy's head as to whether or not, you know, you're like would you like to explain to your kids that, yeah, I went home with your mom after a few beers and had sex with her? Or would you like to say, you know, we went on a couple dates and we got to know each other a little bit and then we got married or started dating?
Mm-hmm. What do you think about a girl calling a guy? Does that turn you off? Say you go out on a date with a girl and you liked her and she called you the next day. Does that turn you off? Or is that okay?
I would say it would probably throw me off a bit, you know, especially if she called. Text messaging, if she just says, hey, or something, that's one thing. But if she calls after her first date the very next day, I mean, that's kind of the guy's job. And I know a lot of guys lack in any kind of chivalry or form of communication anymore. But, yeah, I would be a little thrown off if she called me and just wanted to, like, talk. I'd be like, well, maybe you should text me. I got something to do here.
Okay, now, suppose you're on a date with a girl. Do you expect her to split the bill, or do you always treat?
No, I always treat, especially on the first, second, third date. You know, you gotta treat. No, you definitely don't expect them. If the guy wants you to split the bill or ask
that's
if you're going to pay for it, just
that's
get up and walk out. Don't ever talk to him again.
What do you think about, like, people you're dating being on your Facebook page and stuff like that? Does that creep you out? Do you feel like they're stalking you? What's the etiquette with social networking?
If they do what now? What's the question?
Well, suppose you start dating someone and you're both online. You're both on Facebook, say.
Huh?
Is it acceptable to, like, stalk each other? What do you think about that? Does that bother you if a girl's, like, constantly looking at what you're doing?
I mean, if here's the thing. I have a man code quote that was quote of the month one time. And it was, if Facebook is the problem, Facebook's not the problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it does. Yeah, if Facebook's the problem, Facebook's not the problem. And I mean, by saying that is if you are in a relationship that you're always fighting because of Facebook, something else is wrong with your relationship. Either there's trust issues there, or, you know, somebody did something that it's just that's not the problem. If you can sit there and get mad over something on Facebook, then that's not the problem. There's deeper roots to that.
What do you think about a girl that asks a guy out first?
A girl that asks a guy out first? I think...
Is that a turn-off, or is a guy like that?
What's that?
Is that a turn-off, or does a guy like that?
Yeah, that's a turn-off, for sure. I mean, I don't think a girl should ever ask a guy out.
Okay, you're kind of old-fashioned then.
Yeah, I'm definitely kind of old-fashioned. I think, you know, there's rules to the way that stuff goes, and chivalry and being like opening a door. I think a guy should always open a door for a girl. I think a guy should always ask the girl out.
Mm-hmm.
You definitely can put out vibes to let him know that you want him to ask you out and be very flirty and friendly and stuff, but it ultimately
if he wants you, he's going to find you. He's going to get the hint.
Correct.
Now, let me go back to the bachelor pad for a minute. Wasn't that wonderful what Ames did?
Okay, hold on. Let's back up here. You say it was wonderful what Ames did?
Oh, I thought that was so sweet that he got in the car.
Okay, I admit that it was romantic. It was probably one of the most romantic things that I've ever seen. But playing the game-wise and just common sense-wise, it was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. And I'll explain to you why. They had known each other for less than a week. They're playing a game for $250,000. They both live in the same city, close to each other. The game only lasts for 3 weeks. So he had their weekend, so he had two more weeks to win $250,000. Acceptable thing would have been to do is walk to the limo and say, hey, I've known you for 1 week. I'm not going to tell you I love you, but I'll be home in less than 2 weeks for sure. Maybe I have enough money to buy you a new car if I love you enough. Like, I'm not just going to hop in the limo after knowing a girl, give up $250,000, and go home. It just doesn't make sense. It's not good common sense.
Are they still together, do you know?
No, they broke up 5 days later. My exact point. And he dumped her.
Why?
I don't know why, but
that just goes
to prove my point. Exactly.
Okay, then it wasn't romantic then. Oh.
Yeah, he broke up with her 5 days after they got home.
Oh, that sucks. That Melissa was a nut, huh?
Melissa was definitely a nut. And I know her, and like she was talking to me the other night, and like, I even told her, I'm like, you look like you're batshit crazy.
I know that's gotta be the poor girl. You look nuts on TV. Oh my gosh, she must be so embarrassed watching that. The way she's crying and carrying on, she doesn't even know this guy.
No, and she's like, I got to see the unedited version, which you guys didn't get to because maybe she sends it to me early. And she actually says, I'm in love with you. Like, you guys didn't get to see that because I don't think they wanted to make them look that much more crazy. But she even said, I'm in love with you. And I'm like, about drop my computer on the ground. Like, no way this girl just said that. She's been in the house for a week and says, I'm in love with you. They've kissed one time. Like,
oh,
that just
God,
goes to show you that, you know, she's not, there's a screw loose somewhere.
You know, it's so funny because you watch this show, and you just get, like, you cringe. You're like, oh, my God.
Do you think you think that.
More so than the guys.
I feel like I'm watching One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. I guess the way she acted is it's like a turnoff. I don't think any other guys would want to be with her after seeing that.
No. Who would want to be with her? What would you, if you looked at her and you just watched that show, who on earth would be like, okay, I would like to date that girl.
Oh, God.
That's hilarious.
And who do you think was, this is mean, but we're going to go here anyway. Who do you think's more the fame whore, Jake or Vienna?
Jake. Everything Jake does, people don't understand. Everything Jake does is plotted and schemed. Every word he says, he's thought about, and he's produced, and that's what it is. I mean, I've found out so many things. I heard the rumor was, you know, why he was on for it, or why that they cut the episode the way they did at the end of that one show when he was getting sent home.
Why?
Because they were paying him to be there. He was already getting paid to be there. They guaranteed him 4 episodes. And the way they controlled that was when he was about to get sent home and they knew he was, the ABC changed it to 2 girls instead of any guys going home, so they couldn't send him home then. Then when he was getting sent home the next time, they went right up to the end, cut it, showed the rest of the rose ceremony the next day, so he was on 4 episodes because it was in his contract. I mean, everything he does, and then he uses the excuse, I wanted to be on here to, you know, say my piece to Casey and Vienna,
oh,
and give them my blood.
Please.
Exactly.
Oh,
and then, like, he says, I'm going to donate all the charity, all the money to this some bullshit charity. He says that, I mean, the dude's in huge debt. His business crashed. Like, he's not going to give all his money away. Like, everything he says is a complete lie, and the people that buy into it that haven't met him in person are just hilarious to me. Like, it's so phony, cheesy.
I got to tell you, I love you. You're giving us the best scoop. This is fabulous. Now let's talk about your book again. Tell everybody where they can get it.
You can get it on Amazon, or you can get it on mancodebook.com, my website.
And give a quick synopsis about the book.
The book, you know, talks about pride, chivalry, accountability, and the lack of thereof in men today in our society. And it talks about the reasons why and how I believe that women have the power to change the way men act by who they go after and what they expect from us. And what I mean by that is, like, if you like, you know, Jersey Shore type guys or bad boys and these kind of guys, that's the way guys are going to dress and talk and act. If you make them seem like they're cool, you pay attention to them, that's what we're going to do. We're going to conform to that because ultimately we want to get with you. And if you pay attention to guys, do the right things and do good things, then that's how we're going to act because they're the ones getting the girls. But right now the trend is to like the bad boy and, you know, the jerk, so to speak, and so that's the way guys act. And so you start playing games and end up with unhealthy relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a quick question for you. Have you ever considered talking to high school or college students?
Well, not college students because I just turned 30, but I mean...
Okay, maybe high school students come in and talk about...
I've thought about starting up a school, trying to start up a small school, like a reform school for high school kids that parents could send them to, like a 4-week school or something, and to teach them these things and about little things. And not just that, but, you know, like a reform... They used to have reform schools where you would learn, you know, where the Civil War goes in place. Teach people this stuff again, along with the chivalry part of it and everything else that goes into that.
Exactly.
So,
well, I think that would be fabulous. I could picture you going to their auditorium for an assembly talking about Man Code Book.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've done it. I've spoke before, but I want to turn it into a little more than just my book. My book's a start, but I think that it goes deeper than that. I honestly believe that that's the reason that our country is in the state it is, because of the lack of Man Code men. Men that aren't accountable for anything. And not that there's anything against the women, but they're just saying that our country, the state it is in, is because of the men right now, because we're so unaccountable. We don't take pride in anything. We'll lie, cheat, steal at the drop of a hat just for money. And that's why our government's so messed up. So our country is the same way, and our families are the same way, and our relationships are the same way. So
well, I agree, and I applaud you for your message, and I loved it. Even on the Bachelor Pad and Bachelor show, when you would stand up for this, and I applaud you and thank you for your message. We need
you. Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
One more fun question, and then we'll let you go. Do you like tattoos on girls? Do you think, is that a turn on for guys?
No, I really don't like tattoos on girls that much.
I would say no,
especially a lot of them. I don't mind the hidden one. Like, if you hide it somewhere where you can't really see it that much, you know, it's kind of cute and says I'm a little, you know, I'm a little crazy or whatever. But I guess with a lot of tattoos, like a sleeve or something, a girl is unattractive to me.
Okay. Well, David, again, give everybody your website.
Mancodebook.com.
And we're going to have you on. David's going to be our guest again on, I believe it's October 27th. We're going to have a mental health panel for a whole hour, so we want you to email in your questions that only the guys can answer. David, good luck with your travels and all your endeavors. You have some cool things going on, and you're, you know, we're going to have you on the show more frequently because you give us some good tips.
You got it. Well, thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for your message.
You're a delight. You're a lot of fun.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, David.
Well, we'd like to thank our sponsor tonight, St. Croix Orthopedics. And we are currently looking for sponsors if anyone is interested in sponsoring our show. Contact us, chitchatcafelive@yahoo.com. We're thanking Corey, our producer. Enjoy the Corey King Show every Wednesday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Artist First.
And everybody, listen to our archives. You could just go to our webpage, click on the date, scroll down, and you can listen to us while you're playing on Facebook. Thank you for joining us. We had great guests tonight. Good night, Nancy. Good night, Betty Ann. And I want to leave you with a little quote. Dream as if you'll live forever. Eat cupcakes as if you'll die today. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Night.